accordingly. Eva, certainly. Amum, that world. Atmanam, the subtle body. Uhaya, in both. Ayinam, traveling. Atmanam, the body. Anu, in relationship with. Yea, those. Those who. Cha, also. Iha, in this world. Yea, that which. Rayaha, wealth. Pasavaha, cattle. Griha, houses. Vishriya, having given up. Savam, all. Anya, other. Cha, and. Mam, me. Evam, thus. Vishvataha, Mukam, the all-pervading Lord of the universe. Vajanti, they worship. Anayaya, unflinching. Bhakya, by devotional service. Tan, them. Mito, of death. Atiparaye, I take to the other side. Translation. Thus, the devotee who worships me, the pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to the heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take to the other side of birth. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Repeat that to me, please. Thus the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to the heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Unflinching devotional service, as described in these two verses, means engaging oneself in full Krishna consciousness or devotional service, accepting the Supreme Lord as all in all. Since the Supreme Lord is all-inclusive, if anyone worships him with unflinching faith, he has automatically achieved all other opulences and performed all other duties. The Lord promises herein that he takes his devotee to the other side of birth and death. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. This means no one should try to be happy in this world or to be promoted to the heavenly planets, nor should he try for material wealth, children, houses, or cattle. How liberation is imperceptibly achieved by a pure devotee and what the symptoms have been explained. For the conditioned soul, there are two statuses of life. One status is in this present life, and the other is our preparation for the next life. If I am in the mode of goodness, then I may be preparing for promotion to the higher planets. If I am in the mode of passion, then I shall remain here in a society where activity is very prominent. And if I am in the mode of ignorance, I may be degraded to animal life or a lower grade of human life. But for a devotee, there's no concern for this life or the next life, because in any life, he does not desire elevation in material prosperity or a high grade or a low grade life. He prays to the Lord, quote, "My dear Lord, it does not matter where I am born, but let me be born even as an ant in the house of a devotee." Come an ant. A pure devotee does not pray to the Lord for liberation from this material bondage. Actually, the pure devotee never thinks he is fit for liberation. Considering his past life and his mischievous activities, he thinks that he is fit to be sent to the lowest region of hell. If in this life I am trying to become a devotee, this does not mean that in my past lives I was 100% pious. That is not possible. A devotee, therefore, is always conscious of his real position. Only by his full surrender to the Lord, by the Lord's grace, are his sufferings made shorter. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, "Surrender unto me, and I will give you protection from all kinds of sinful reactions." That is his mercy. But this does not mean that one who has surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord has committed no misdeeds in his past life. A devotee always prays, "For my misdeeds," quote, "for my misdeeds may I be born again and again, but my only prayer is that I may not forget your service." The devotee has that much mental strength, and he prays to the Lord, quote, "May I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee so that I may again get a chance to develop myself." A pure devotee is not anxious to elevate himself to his next birth. He has already given up that sort of hope in any life in which one is born as a householder or even as an animal. One must have some children, some resources, or some possessions. But a devotee is not anxious to possess anything. He is satisfied with whatever is obtainable by God's grace. Prabhupada is really explaining what constitutes a devotee. He is not at all attached to improving his social status or improving the status of education of his children. He is not neglectful. He is dutiful. But he does not spend too much time on the upliftment of temporary household or social life. He fully engages in the service of the Lord, and for other affairs, he simply spares as much time as absolutely necessary. Yataham upayunjanaha. Such a pure devotee does not care for what is going to happen in the next life or in this life. He does not care even for family, children, or society. He fully engages in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that without the knowledge of the devotee, the Lord arranges for his devotee to be immediately transferred to his transcendental abode just after leaving his body. After quitting his body, he does not go into the womb of another mother. The ordinary common living entity after death is transferred to the womb of another mother. The ordinary coming according to his karma or activities to another type of body. But as far as the devotee is concerned, he is once transferred to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. This is the Lord's special mercy. How is it possible? It is explained in the following verses. Because he is all powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. He can immediately transfer a person to Vaikuntha. This is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is favorably disposed to the pure devotees. So Prabhupada is emphasizing to us in this wonderful, inclusive and comprehensive report what constitutes a devotee. How a devotee thinks, how a devotee aspires. Interesting here that we see and reflect on how Prabhupada created this amazing society of ISKCON, the National Society of Krishna Consciousness. And we often revisit and ask ourselves, just what is this society? And how is it working? And how is it doing? How much is it on track? According to what Prabhupada has given us and warned us. You know how Prabhupada has warned us in so many things. He warned us, especially in our American mentality, that we change so much. He warned us about the cheating materialist, the atheist, and their degradation. He warned us of the arrogant and cheating scientists. He warned us of the voidist and the impersonalist. He warned us of the smarta brahmanas. He warned us of the sahadiyas. He gave us a whole lot of warnings. A lot of things to watch out for, to be careful as we try to go on the royal path of devotion. Sometimes we may ask ourselves, how much have we heeded these particular warnings? First, let us look. I need some help. I'm recovering from flu and low fever, so I need help for this class. If I have strength. So, Prabhupada told us ISKCON. What did he say ISKCON is? What are we doing? What is this society? What is ISKCON? What did Prabhupada say ISKCON is? Yes? Facilitating love and exchange between devotees. What is some of the understanding of ISKCON? He said it's his body. Interesting. What else did he say? What else have we heard or think that he said? If you look at the initially what Prabhupada has given us, the criterion, ISKCON. Yes, he kind of mentioned that. We've all given our lives to this society. What is this society that we've given our lives to? Is it workaholics? International Society of Politics? International Society of Liberation? What are we?
He gave us this society so that we could not just come together, but also we could, by coming together, share a philosophy and theology with the rest of the world, which would redeem it, which would uplift it, and which would hopefully help it to return to its original position.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a branch of the Chaitanya tree, and the purpose of it is to preach the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to carry out the mission of the Acharyas, the Parampara.
Okay. And some of the actual tenets, yes,
To give us to facilitate, to give us a chance to cultivate our intrinsic Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Jada Maharaj, you wish? Okay. You know, we've dedicated ourselves. We should remind ourselves. But also told us how ISKCON is a cultural society for re-spiritualizing the world. Meaning that he didn't tell us it's a religion, it's a philosophy, it's a church, it's a mosque. But it's massive. And that it's a culture. Culture involves everything. One does. But a special kind of culture, spiritual transcendental culture for doing something. It means we have a distinct endowment to embrace this individually, collectively as a society, but also to transform the world. So we transform ourselves. Because we can't transform the world, we don't transform ourselves. But it means we are to do what we are to do, what we are commissioned by our acharyas, acharya man purusha veda. We know the acharya to know what is what. We're conditioned to take what they have given us and to protect it in such a way and to show it and to radiate and amplify it in such a way that it makes a tremendous difference to the whole planet. So we are not just a moth to do what we do with ourselves for ourselves. But Lord Chaitanya has given us his mission, every town, every village. And Prabhupada is giving some additional clarification on what constitutes being a devotee. Now, we find that in this endeavor that Prabhupada is mentioning, that devotee does not want to go to the heavenly planets. Although we've heard Prabhupada say that many of his disciples want to go to the heavenly planets. Does it mean that we've joined the society just to go to heavenly planets? After all, does it mean that the quality of our devotion and consciousness may be more geared toward that of the heavenly kingdom than that of Raj? Perhaps so. But the question is, why and how do we address that? We see that the demigods, for instance, agencies in the heavenly kingdoms, sometimes they distinctly know Krishna, but they also distinctly want their field of activity to control, to manipulate. They're interested in their sovereign territories, their sovereign influence. So sometimes we may find ourselves in that kind of situation where the quality or level of devotion is more based on, yes, knowing Krishna, knowing the Shastra, knowing Sadhu, knowing Guru, but not on the level that will allow us to align and connect with the spiritual realm. We look at our wonderful society, and I think we all can say that there's so many wonderful things about being a devotee. There is just so many things on every way that you can think about. I'm just finishing this year, 25 country world tour, other year 35 country world tour. And I was trying to study the temples, the devotees, the situations very closely. So many wonderful things. But now, what I'm going to share may sound pessimistic. I'm a very optimistic person about our society because I realize that the most important things happen in spite of us. And I'm totally convinced that we know that you can go back to Godhead by Nitya Siddha, by Sadhana Siddha, and by Kripa Siddha. And I'm totally convinced that we can be in line for Kripa Siddha. So what I may say may sound pessimistic, but just write it off today if you have trouble with my class. Just say, my wife has a fever today, so maybe his class is a little strange. Or you may say, aha, that's just what I've been thinking. Some of the things that Maharaj is getting ready to say. Well, let me say very optimistically first. Like myself, I am extremely happy in my life as a sannyasi. I think it's the most amazing choice I've ever made. Second choice to become a guru. So many opportunities, so many perks. As sannyasis, we get the best. We have the best cell phones. We have the best computers. We have the best watches. Unbelievable. We eat the best food, in most cases. Now, I do admit, I have no cell phone. I have no credit card. I don't even travel with a computer, even though I get almost 200 emails a day sometimes. That's interesting how to deal with that. But at the same time, we realize that, yes, these days, and Kali Yuga is kind of interesting. The householders on welfare, and many of the sannyasis, we got the number one credit cards, and we got the newest cell phones, and the best computers, etc. Best houses sometimes also. Also got really nice houses. By the mercy of my disciples, but I don't own any house. But there is an issue. In my own personal life, best of worlds. 55% of my preaching goes directly to devotees. Just finished 22 seminars in different countries on 22 different topics. I do some preaching to the interfaith. I do preaching to the business community, get paid for it. Interfaith, I meet movie stars, presidents of countries, and diplomats. It's a wonderful life. And I say only by the mercy of Prabhupada, I have this opportunity. Wonderful life. But I'm finding that I have a serious problem. I wrote one part of it in my Vyas Puja offering. It's that I see so many people who are Vaishnavas who are suffering. I talk about these kind of issues, and so almost every other month I get a letter of somebody who is suicidal. But even a greater problem I find is that, sort of a question that Savas brought up the other day, people's habits, is that why do we have such a powerful philosophy and we know so much, but so often we act so poorly? Or why do we have so many people who don't seem to sufficiently change? Oh, let's talk about that just for a few minutes. Huh? Today is my last day here, so I can let it hang out, huh? That's, if people don't like this class cast when they hear it or download it, my wife has a fever today. Why so many people? Now, we know, parabdha karma, we know so much has to do with what we've brought into this lifetime, what is unfolding. So many people will find who are quite serious. We'll find that even before they came into Krishna consciousness, they had certain qualities that are similar. We find so often people in this society lack integrity, morality. I think this is a serious issue. Because we are to become Sanatana Dharmis, but we cannot genuinely embrace Sanatana Dharma if we jump over Dharma. We know that many ways we act so bad because one major thing is we make so many offenses while we enter the holy names. We make our vows, our brat, identity as Vaishnavas, initiation ceremony. We hear again and again that to make this work, we have to avoid the offenses. We also understand that some things have to do with the quality of faith. We understand that many things have to do with the quality of association. We are all social beings, and Sangha has tremendous effect. The quality of Sangha has tremendous effect in how we internalize and respond and what we also produce. So something is not quite right that we have so much knowledge, so much mercy, and we have so many deviations, so many fall downs, we have so much lack of integrity and morality. Now I'm very optimistic now, so just keep that, follow that on this side while I come from this side for a minute. We see the example. Ramanujacharya, he once was very much favoring, you know, one household couple. You've heard the story. And he wanted to help to others understand why such situation was there. Some of the renouncers were thinking, but we are renounced. We are fully committed to the Mahat. We are fully dedicated. Why is Guru Maharaj seemingly giving so much care, attention to this household couple? And so he said, one of the devotees from the Mahat, while one Mataji was taking rest, the lady was taking rest, and he began to take her bangles and jewelry. And so, as he was taking from one side, she turned in the bed, and then the Brahmachari thought that she was waking up and he ran away. The husband came, and the husband was inquiring how the day was, and she asked, is there some problem that's going on at the Mahat? And she reported how one of the devotees had come to the home and was stealing her bangles. And the husband was quite disturbed, thinking, well, what happened? Because she explained how he ran away. And the husband wanted to know why you chased him away, why you sent him away. But she shared how she was turning over so that he could take them from the other side. And same Ramanuja arranged for some of the cloth of the sannyasis to be rearranged, and he became so angry, so disturbed, so combative. So just an example of renunciation. The renunciation doesn't have to do with avoidance or what we don't have, but in whatever ashram we're in, it has more to do with the consciousness of proprietorship. So we can even give up so many things, so-called, but still have such proprietorship. Because surrender, yes, has something to do with what we give up, but it has more to do with what we are holding back. So we can be holding back all kinds of things. And Krishna is not being ingratiated by what we offer him while we give him something to flatter him, to ingratiate him while we're holding back. It doesn't work that way. And so there are times when we have given as devotees, we've given a hell of a lot, but we're still holding back in some very significant areas. And it can create individual and also, you know, societal problems for the community. We find, it's like sometimes, you know, the Nagababas, they're so renounced, but they can curse each other and curse you and anything about who bathes first, huh? Or something that they're attached to, even though they've given up so much and have nothing, don't have clothes, don't have resident home, and so many things. And so sometimes the renunciation has to be, of course, on a deeper level, where we are not in a fruitive consciousness, or we are not just dealing so much with the physicality of the externals, but deep into a state of awareness. We see the major product of our institution, in some ways, are its children. And we see so many of the children so disappointed. We hear, and parents think, oh, my little Bhakti Das, he must be a deva, demigod from the heavenly planets. I'm sure. Just look at his eye, look at his smile. I'm sure he's a demigod. Oh, just look. So beautiful. I've created a little one just like me. Everyone wants to have a little one just like themselves. And they're so happy. And then a few years later, everything is wonderful. A couple more years, things are a little bit questionable. A few years later, oh my God, what happened to my son or daughter? Well, you're right. Little Bhakti Das was some kind of sub-demigod. But what do demigods do? So many of them. They are huge sense gratifiers. They've come from environments where there is big maha sense gratification. So naturally, when they're here in this world, they're looking how to reclaim sense gratification that's up to their caliber. And so therefore, they have this tremendous passion for sense gratification. And if we cannot offer them ways to channel that, we can offer them abilities to direct and to cultivate and go beyond such, then we'll be embarrassed time and time again at how our children pursue sense gratification with so much knowledge. The devas, they have so much knowledge, so much shakti, and they are so eager to have their particular enjoyments. In our pursuits of devotional service, we sometimes have to remind ourselves also that what we're doing is so powerful and also so dangerous. This is the most wonderful, powerful commitment you can make, and it is the most dangerous. It is the most dangerous of the process based on surrenderity. We surrender to scripture, we surrender to guru, we surrender to sadhu. Sometimes devotees are so much in surrendering when they do multi-level, they do this, do that. Everything they do, they surrender to it. See, when devotees start something, they've been so trained of how to surrender. So anything that comes out, the forum, landmark, I'm not categorizing these things, but we surrender to whatever is there because we're such in that mindset. Well, that is beautiful. But it is also dangerous if we do it without proper mindfulness. And we look at the beauty of Vedic culture. There is no culture available, especially Varnashram Dharma, that helps us in the most expedient way for getting out of these material bodies, going into the spiritual world. But there is no culture more dangerous. Yeah. Because it's Vedic culture that, when it is abused and not honored properly, creates autocrats, tyrants, creates people who cannot accept feedback. Becomes very difficult. Creates casteism, creates chauvinism, creates racism, creates all creates minimization of children, creates so many things that it's supposed to be able to do the opposite, to improve and to address and to give benefit. Well, that is natural. When something is very powerful, if it is misused, then it becomes that powerfully destructive. That's a sign that it's powerful. Something is not powerful, if you do it the right or do it in the wrong way, it doesn't matter. But if it's powerful, if you do it in the wrong way, then you get some very serious results. Going for a serious operation, brain operation, heart operation, because it's very delicate. If it's done wrong, it'll kill you. So something that's so powerful, it can empower, it can engage people in the most amazing ways. And it can also create all kinds of dysfunctionalism because of its power. Sometimes I wonder, I see our leaders and I see we have so many powerful leaders, so intelligent, so creative. And at the same time, we often make so many dumb decisions. I'm one of them, and I got to speak for myself. I mean, on the GBC board, I'm the third most senior in terms of how long I've been on the board. So I'm talking about myself now also. How is it that we do this? Well, Bhagavatam tells us when there is abuse, minimization of elders, of Brahmins, of children, of cows, of women, there is distinct results. And because we're having such an environment where there is not proper care in situations of such entities, such agencies, then there is shortness of life and there is inauspiciousness. Sometimes it's like a cloud over our leadership, a cloud over some of our meetings. Just like, you know, smoke cloud. It has to do with the fallout from so many of these things. Why people can be so intelligent and be so dedicated and so serious and sometimes have so many things that come out that are unhealthy. I'm just talking about this negative side now. I'm very optimistic now. But this verse is talking about heavenly kingdom planets and what constitutes a devotee. So I want to address some of these things from this particular angle. So it lets us know something is not quite being honored the way it should be. Because do we say, well, maybe what Prabhupada has given us is too difficult? A teacher who gives a message, a lesson that's too difficult is a cruel teacher. A teacher who gives a message that nobody can pass, gives a test that nobody can pass, would be a cruel teacher. So we can never think that Prabhupada would be of that nature. Of course not. A teacher gives a lesson and everybody fails. Teacher says, just see. I know my stuff. And the students, they just can't get it. It would be very insensitive to give students something that you know that they can't honor and they can't achieve. Surely Prabhupada has given us what is possible and has given us the way so that it can be successful. But it's kind of similar to like, just take a child who's in junior high school. And this child somehow gets promoted, some unusual situation, and gets sent to the university. Bypasses even high school. Now there are three ways of looking at this. I think this is similar to our situation as Vaishnavas in the 21st century. The first way is that the kid thinks, just see, I knew it. I knew I was a special student. I knew I was very bright and brilliant. And now the Board of Education understands that. They have given me my rightful due. Such a mentality would create a failure. If we think, as Prabhupada says in this verse, if we think that we are so wonderful from the past, so much pious credits, that this is why we get what we get, if we think we deserve what we have, we think that, yes, now we are gurus, now we are Vaishnava Brahmanas, now we are this, now we are that. And we really think that now we are really all of that, we become a failure. Arrogance will lack the ability to access the deep bhakti. But also we'll be a failure if we think, well, like the child who's now in junior high put into the college, if the child thinks, this is impossible. I'm not even going to try. There's no way I can be successful. No way I'm going to be able to match and exist with these university people and I'm just a junior high student, no way. We'll also be a failure. So if the child is accepting that he or she is already that, or accepting that it's an impossibility, will be a failure. We're thinking that we're all those things will be a failure. If we think that it's too far beyond our ability, then we will rationalize, justify, and create a subculture of all kinds of deviations that sometimes happens and we'll justify it. But the third perspective is that child who's in junior high, who's now in university, is just overwhelmed and amazed that somehow this mercy has come upon him. And now the child is thinking, so let me come up to this. Let me be worthy of what has been given to me. Let me work hard so that I can maintain this. Let me work genuinely so that I can really be able to gain all full benefit from this great mercy that has come. So I think our situation is somewhat like that. That sometimes we think that we're worthy of what Prabhupada has given us, and we become an embarrassment. And other times we think that it's too difficult, it's impractical, we really can't do this now, we really can't follow four rules, maybe two, maybe one and a half, and we justify all kinds of stuff, and we create all kinds of things trying to be politically correct, and all kind of arrangements trying to adjust to mundane culture, and we create an embarrassment. But the other side is recognizing that, yes, we have been given something very, very important, very powerful, beyond our quality. But now that it's come upon us, let us come up to it and use it in the way, the best way that we can. Another major thing, and then I want to read a few direct quotes, because I want Prabhupada to speak for us and not let my feverish mind speak. But even notice, he explains very profoundly in the Shikshamrita. And he lets us know that unless one is a paramahamsa, that yes, four things must be there. That there must be proper care of the body. So if we don't give the proper care of the body, it's going to give us some negative reactions and difficulties in our pursuit of devotional life. Proper stimulation of the mind. If the mind is not properly stimulated, we can engage the body on and on and on, and we can repress it and all do all kinds of things, but it won't create a sense of longevity. We can do so many things outside of our natural propensities or whatever, as a crisis, as an emergency, as need, as manpower short, whatever, but it's short term. Also, it gives us the understanding that it must be proper socialization. That we're social beings and we're looking and we need proper reinforcement from the environment, proper social economic arrangement, based on genuine spiritual needs. And fourth, of course, the study of the Shastra. See, everyone, I'll be very brief on this, everyone has genuine spiritual needs. I'm not talking about wants. And we also have genuine spiritual responsibilities. Both of these are as important as the other. A brahmachari who's 55 years old has different spiritual needs than a brahmachari who's 18 years old. A householder who has two children has different needs than a householder who has six. A grihastha has different needs than a vanaprastha. In other words, there are different, distinct, genuine spiritual needs that every person has, and also different genuine spiritual obligations or responsibilities that each one should be committed to offer to community. When there's a lacking in either way, there is a lacking of proper development for the institution, for the community, and for the individual. Sometimes people want their own so-called wants fulfilled, not even genuine needs. But they're not ready to address their commitments to the institution. Or sometimes the institution seems to demand the duties from the person without fulfilling the particular person's spiritual, genuine needs. So we have to be careful and have these two parallels run. And this will also minimize some of the deviations and the fall downs and the weakness of heart in so many ways. So we have the physics of the holy name. We have the proper integration between honoring the body, the mind, socialization, and proper study of the Shastra. We have karmic patterns and karmic influences. But now what I want to address now, this last part of class, I want to address something. I want to offer this. And our scholars here, you know, maybe they can help me with this or tear it down in a few minutes. One of the things we want to bring up is a very serious issue. Is this issue of jumping over Dharma. Because in several cases, what happens is that we're like trying to become, say like someone's trying to become a psychiatrist without going to medical school. It just don't happen that way. There's the organic arrangement to become a proper doctor, and then you pursue the specialty as a psychiatrist. So we're having a lot of people giving a lot of embarrassments. Huh? Because they are knowing the higher, speaking about the higher, writing about the higher, and somehow they're in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. And so a serious issue is that we have so much activity that's in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, and it's like an anchor on our society and on our individual growth. And Prabhupada says in several ways, he says it is a joke, it is an impossibility to become transcendental and to neglect the mode of goodness. In other words, we know the mode of ignorance and passion as well as goodness. We are not to get stuck in any of these. But Vaishnavas are to work out, not in. Work out of the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness becomes a natural platform for transcendence. An organic and natural platform. So many things of deviation has to do with lack of integrity, lack of morality, whether it's sexual fall downs, whether it's abuse of finances, embezzlement, whatever. It's so much connected with the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. There are things that sometimes happen in our society that if your mother, your father knew, they would say, hold a minute. I didn't raise you to live with people who do like that. Or there are many things that we do sometimes in society that even though your parents are not transcendentalist, they would be very unhappy for you to do it or for you to live with people, especially with people who do such. We're just saying that this does happen. Not that this is the essence of our society, but it is a serious issue. We want to look at why and what some of the things that need to be addressed. So one of the areas I want to address today, as we're in the class, is this idea and position of the mode of goodness. Just like the child who goes to the university, who's only in junior high, and thinks, well, I'm here now, and it should have happened a long time ago, and I'm glad people realized that I was very special, I was very bright, and now the world knows that I am a high achiever. Sometimes we have like that mentality, or we have the mentality of feeling that it's too much, too difficult, it's impractical, and we justify deviations. We justify mediocrity. So I want to just look here, very brief. I won't take too long. But a few short references. I want Prabhupada to speak for us himself on this issue. First, in the Bhagavad Gita 14:10 purport. If one wants, this is quote, he can develop by practice the mode of goodness and thus defeat the mode of ignorance and passion. Although there are these modes of material nature, if one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness, and by transcending the mode of goodness, he can be situated in pure goodness, which is called, of course, Vasudeva state, state in which one can understand the science of God. So Prabhupada is saying that there is this mode of ignorance, there is this mode of passion, and that if one is blessed, one can be able to be in the mode of goodness, and from there, be able to enter into pure goodness, giving it as a launching pad. Bhakti Vinod, in his comment on the Shashastakam, he mentions how one who chants offensively is overwhelmed with thoughts of others' well-being. We have too many people in all positions who are not overwhelmed with others' well-being. but are too much caught up in their own egocentricity, their own sovereignty, sometimes their own manipulation, exploitation. It means that something ain't quite right with the quality of chanting. Let's go back to the mode of goodness. In Hawaii, this is a walk, Srila Prabhupada, I'm sorry, it's a lecture of Srila Prabhupada in 1974 in Hawaii. Prabhupada says, because, quote, without coming to the platform of Satvagun, nobody can advance in spiritual life. That is a fact, just like nobody is allowed to enter into the law college unless he is a graduate. Prabhupada says, without coming to this platform, he says, nobody can advance in spiritual life. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-21, quote, learned persons dedicated to Vedic culture are elevated by the mode of goodness to higher and higher positions. The mode of ignorance, on the other hand, forces one to fall headfirst into lower and lower births, and by the mode of passion, one continues transmigrating through human bodies. Learned persons dedicated to Vedic culture are elevated by the mode of goodness. In the Nectar of Instruction, in the preface, Prabhupada speaks, in all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement to spiritual life. Everyone within this material world is engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself into the platform of goodness, Satvagun, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and then everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. Prabhupada says, by entering the mode of goodness, then one will be able to understand what is to be done, how it is to be done, why it is to be done. It allows the organic arrangement for one to genuinely embrace transcendence. Let me just read one more. There's so many we can share. Here, this is a lecture in Calcutta, 1974, quoting Prabhupada. So we have to give up the association of Rajagun and Tamagun. Then there is question of progress. Otherwise, it is simply a bluff. Prabhupada says, So we have to give up the association of Rajagun and Tamagun. Then there is question of progress. Why do we have so many people been chanting japa for 32, 34 years? And they're obnoxious persons. Huh? Why do we have people been doing some of these things for 30, 25 years? And they have tremendous bad habits because of the quality of the devotion, the consciousness of thinking that we're already that, and not being honest and integral humans. Because the mode of goodness means truthfulness, it means kindness, it means compassion, it means thoughtfulness, it means honesty, it means all of these things that constitutes Dharma, that helps us to then to be, see, Sanatana Dharmis. Here's the last one. Well, just two more short ones. This is from Anchalila 192. If in all one's activities he strictly adheres to the mode of goodness, he will certainly develop his dormant Krishna consciousness and ultimately become a pure devotee of Krishna. Last one. It's a little late. Here's Bhagavatam 6.14.1. This is a discussion with Mr. Tritikatu. Quote, in this material world, everyone is obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance. However, unless one conquers these modes and comes to the platform of goodness, there is no chance of one becoming a pure devotee. Prabhupada says, no chance. I'm going to end with this point. We want mercy more than law. Krishna's law is there, and we don't want to minimize his laws. But we want to enter into and stand in line for Krishna's department of mercy. But mercy also is to be in concatenation with effort. A certain amount of effort quality of effort produces certain quality of mercy. We don't just wait for mercy to fall, nor do we think that we can do everything necessary without mercy, or that we can even maintain or survive without mercy. Why do we have so many good people falling down? Look at our ashram. I think in our sannyasi ashram, over half of the sannyasis have fallen down. Why? Obviously, we're not able to do this on our own intelligence, our own strength. But with mercy, along with effort, then there will be no fall downs. Nobody falls down who doesn't want to fall down. Meaning that there is something in the desires, the aggregate of the desires, that is wanting to engage in sense gratification, and then Maya makes opportunities to happen. And every time we have these falls, it just sends a wave throughout the culture of bhakti, and it makes devotion a little more difficult for everyone. Like every time there's more advancement, it makes the process more easier, more joyful, more exciting, because we're all in this together. When you have a few people happening falling down, it's one thing. But when you have so many, then we have to look closer at how to make this work, how to protect each other better. Now we have so many people falling down, every time there's a little rumor, it just goes all around the world, and people assume that it's true, because most times it is true. So unfortunate. We have such a low trust culture that's happening now. About 2 years ago, somebody said, I fell down in a lodge with two women, and I'm wearing white. I came to Italy, people said, my wife, oh, you've changed back to saffron. I said, oh my God. I've never, even one day, missed chanting my 16 rounds, never deviated. Pray for mercy. Huh? But here, we see that some issue was there that needs to be addressed. And one of those issues we're saying is the mode, the proper understanding of the mode of goodness, to work out of that, which then gives us more protection. I want to end with this example of mercy. It's like somebody falls into, say someone, you know, fell into a river, into a well. So they're crying out, help, 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 get me out of here. Somebody, do something. I'm dying, I'll die here. And the person comes by and throws on a rope. They throw the rope into the well. Now some people are still yelling out, help, help, help. The person at the top says, grab the rope, stupid. And says, I'm suffering. Get me out of here. Do something. Help, help, help. Some devotees are like that. Huh? We're in this difficult situation. Papa's given us, and the charis have given us the rope. It's there. And we're thinking, hey, help, help, do something. Now another aspect is somebody grabs the rope and they go halfway up and they just start holding there. I thought you were going to help me. Get me out of here. I'm suffering. Come on, get me out of here. I'm dying. And holding on to the rope. What happens when you're just holding in a place of tension? Huh? After a while, the pressure, the tension, you start sliding back down. And so sometimes we start making some progress. We get a little comfortable. We get a little puffed up. We start thinking we're already there, perhaps. And we're holding on. And we're thinking, somebody else has got to make it happen. Prabhupada, make it happen. Come on. I'm your devotee. Come on, make it happen. Yeah, but you got it. Now, keep on going. And so the idea is that, yes, we're in this situation, and we scream out and we cry out, and help comes, and now when the help is there, it's not just a matter of holding on, but now we have to hold on and we have to do the necessary that allows us to get pulled up until we are out of the well once and for all. So what do we talk about today? So in summary, in this verse, Prabhupada was mentioning how a devotee doesn't want all of these material things. The devotee doesn't want to go to the heavenly kingdoms. We made a discussion, short discussion, about things that Prabhupada warned us of. He warned us about this mentality of wanting to go to the heavenly kingdoms or wanting mystic power. He warned us about this mentality of what? Of the danger of materialists, of atheists, of voidists, of impersonalists. He warned us of the scientists. He warned us of sahajiyas, etc., and the smarta brahmas. He also helped us to understand that Krishna consciousness is this institution so we can come together and be able to have this kind of sangha, to be able to honor the culture of bhakti. That Krishna consciousness is a cultural movement for re-spiritualizing the whole planet. So we have a lot of work to be able to do what we do as Vaishnavas in such a way that not only is it powerful and effective for us, but that it radiates throughout the world and it brings efficient transformation. We mentioned about sometimes we get a little bewildered about our children. Because our children are a major example of what we need to do better, what we need to work on. It's like a barometer. We have so many wonderful kids, but we have so many kids who are in a dilemma. And a lot of it has to do, of course, with the nature of how they come into this world. Is it all of us are having successes and failures? Because karma is an awesome thing. And as it aggregates, it produces. And it carries for many, many lifetimes. We said there's an issue that many people are not changing so much. And many people who are a certain way, they even came into the society in a certain way because of karma. And that doesn't take away from our philosophy. It adds to it. It shows that, yes, that life is a continual, that according to how we use our free will, certain things happen and unfold in our lives. And then we looked at the fact that sometimes some of the issues that confront our society is because of a lack of protection of elders, of women, of child, of children, of cows, etc. That there's certain things, especially when it comes to leadership, certain kind of fallout that happens when these things are not addressed, and certain kind of beautiful things that accelerate when they are addressed within the proper way. And then we looked at the idea of dharma, particularly that Prabhupada makes many references of why dharma or why the mode of goodness is important. Not that we work in the mode of goodness, but we work out of the mode of goodness. Then our last point was giving the example of the child going to school, or like the person in the well. Child who's in junior high gets promoted to university level, so the kid can either think that he's okay and get complacent, can think it's too difficult and become a failure, but to accept this wonderful mercy and to use it and to become up to that. And then the case in the well, that we get the rope and we cry out and cry out, sometimes minimizing that it's there, or we grab hold to it, but we only hold on for a while and think that now it's all supposed to happen without our constant effort, and then we start sliding down. So anyway, this was one way of looking at some of the issues, though we know so much, but sometimes we behave in such unfortunate ways that can be embarrassing to ourselves and embarrassing, to our founder, Acharya, who's given us so much. Any questions or any comments? Any clarifications? Anyway, I got a fever today, so you can put everything I said a little abrupt on the fact that my wife's got a fever.
When you talk about the modes of nature and the mode of goodness, then to me, I know that the Brahmins are supposed to operate in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. So it seems like you're suggesting that in order to to become a pure devotee, then you would have to be a Brahmin. Mm-hmm. But let's say I go out and get a job right now. It's probably not going to be a Brahminical job. And if I were to go sell something, in fact, I found that most people, when they want you to sell something, they want you to repeat a lie over and over again. It's not very Brahminical. It breaks the quality of truthfulness. So how can we develop this mode of goodness in a society when we go out into the society which is full of all three modes, not just one mode?
It's a nice question. But we know, especially in Kali Yuga, that the Varnas are all confused in such ways. Even if one is trying to honestly honor a Varna, like Brahmana, that society basically doesn't support it or doesn't give facilitation. But what's important, even more than what we do physically, is consciousness, the kind of consciousness of truthfulness, of righteousness, etc. That then, because we're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, then acts as a launching pad for us to develop develop the Krishna consciousness. So even though one, because we have many cases like that, we have many wonderful brahmanas who have to run after money constantly. You know, they're practically having to live externally, almost in the mood, of vicious. But even if they have to do that externally, they still must be careful about what is going on internally. That there are times when we have to be more in the world, but to be careful not to be of the world.
Grihasthas donate 50% of their income in order to purify. Now, of course, if someone earns 600 a month and they're in a 600, maybe they cannot donate 600, you know, any half their, then in that case, they should at least donate their time. And they should always make sure they don't deviate from the four relative principles in their 16 rounds. So
very,
in this way,
very important.
They'll keep the proper consciousness.
Yes, yeah, so even if we have to do this kind of job, that kind of job. As we put Krishna in the center, and one of the ways we put Krishna in the center is we use some distinctly some of the fruits of that to evolve itself in the mission of Srila Prabhupada. While we are careful to see that we're following the four rules and regulations, any kind of job, any kind of work, any kind of association that's causing us not to honor the four rules and regulations, we should realize that that is to our demise. That is Maya, that is Kali, taking advantage, you know, of our situation. And so as we engage, as Govinda Dada is saying, in this way, then even though one may have for a while, hopefully it's not, you know, a long thing, one may have that kind of job that's very demanding and immature energy, but then it becomes quite a less distracting on the consciousness as we're putting Krishna in the center, then one can be like on a mission. You know, you're on a mission, you're going here, you're doing this, but you have the goal in mind, you're keeping focused on the goal. And so we're moving through this, moving through that, by this job, this service. So if you keep on a mission consciousness, then one gets less distracted, you know, by the mitigating things. Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it does state so many different qualities of the mode of goodness. And you know, I guess we could sit down and memorize all of those particular qualities and one by one try to institute them within our life. And at the same time, we find that if that's the mentality, sometimes that can be, you know, not really Krishna consciousness. So, you know, it says that if one engages in Krishna consciousness, one has no obligations. One is free from all obligations that one has surrendered one's life completely to Krishna. But here we're saying that Prabhupada so many times that if you don't come to the mode of goodness, there's no question of advancement in spirituality. So, you know, to me, there's a little bit of a, you know, I don't know if the word dichotomy is the right word, but, you know, there's a little bit of strangeness there in the sense that, you know, for us to go along and concentrate or meditate, I got to be good today. Today I'm going to be humble. Today I'm going to be renounced. Today I'm going to try to preach. Today I'm going to try to give in gifts. Today I'm going to try to accept gifts. Today I'm going to do some deity worship. Today I'm going to try to teach someone about deity worship. You know, just trying to focus on all those things, you can go a little bit batty. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get overwhelmed. You can become, you might say, even discouraged. So what is the median here? What is the you know, proper format to take this understanding that you've been, you know, telling us this morning? Mm-hmm. What's pragmatic here? What's practical for just an everyday, you know, devotee in Krishna consciousness?
Yes, one can feel overwhelmed by all the rules and regulations, all the aparads, 10 Vaishnava aparads, there's Seva aparads, and there's Dham aparad, and there's Nam aparad, and there's so many different, you know, situations in each of the categories. Or we look at the 26 qualities of a devotee. We think every day how to possess each of these qualities. No, that's not the spirit that a Vaishnava should associate or engage in. Because as we are understanding the essence, having humility, accepting the mercy, then so many of these qualities just naturally come out. We don't have to think about every single offense not to avoid. As a matter of fact, they can be unhealthy. But we should think about what is to be done and to do it with greater and greater depth of purity. And then everything comes out, because as we were discussing in my class the other day, is that our nature is that we are pure. So we don't have to think about all the different things, watering each leaf or every single thing we have to avoid. But as we do the right thing, then the other things also, they fall to the side in this way. And one of those things is really just having more gratitude about our position as disciples or as grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada. As we have more gratitude for what it means to be under the umbrella of the Saraswat family, under the umbrella of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, under the direct umbrella of Srila Prabhupada, then we have much more appreciation for what we have, and we do everything with more quality. See, it's not that we have to sometimes know so much or acquire so much, but we do want to go deeper in what is, you know, what is given to us. And so as we go deeper, then these other things, they fall to the side. We know what swadhu, pade. The more we do service, you know, the more we relish taste, the more there is, you know, genuine service. We also realize that as we are having this higher taste, lower taste things, you know, just fall to the side in that way. Yes.
So on that particular point, we see that there's, you made a comment that there's many devotees that have been chanting for 25, 30, 35 years. And I think that you said there's no change.
And I said some still have very obnoxious personalities, bad habits.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit concerned about that because, mm-hmm. you know, I've been chanting for 31 years. I'm getting a little bit concerned here. So when we talk about change, of course, there's a lot of variegateness to that. I understand.
Yes.
But one would just think, just by the potency of the holy name itself, that it says if you chant Hare Krishna once, that, you know, with sincerity, that it can eliminate all one's sinful activities for millions of births. Yes. So I think at one time, sometime along the road when I was a brand new bhakta, I think I did cry out in some kind of sincerity. At least one day, I believe. These days, I'm not sure. But I think at one time when I was a bhakta, I did cry out in extreme anxiety, Hare Krishna. And I'm not sure if it was even the whole mantra if I did, but at least I know I said Hare Krishna once in complete sincerity. So, you know, why can't that one time, you know, why can't that one particular moment of my life, because that's all it takes, it just takes a moment, it takes a second, why can't that save me 31 years later? And why can't I develop some kind of a change? Why can't I become more, you might say, open-minded or whatever the degree that you're speaking about? And why is it that some of us do fall away? I mean, we hear the same thing all the time. We say, oh, because of offenses. And we just kind of like leave it at that. But, you know, somewhere along the line, they must have chanted very sincerely. And they, you know, were given a lot of mercy. And they've done a lot of things for Srila Prabhupada.
Yes. And now I go to my positive side and come back to the negative side. The positive side is, yes, all of these things that we do in connection with devotional culture is depositing in our spiritual bank account. And devotees, and so many devotees, are so rich, so wealthy with what they have in their spiritual bank accounts. Every time they chant the holy name, at darshan, worship Tulsi, water on Tulsi, Charanamrita, all of these things are adding to our spiritual bank account. And that's there. But, I go to this other side. But we see Junior Haridas, Ramachandra, Puri. We see that they are, and we gave the example the other day of Dwaita Acharya's sons, Lord Nityananda's sons, the Prabhupada's sons. There's so many cases. an example of many of Prabhupada's personal servants and secretaries. So there can be so much available. Or an example of Kala Krishnadas. So much available that's there, but still free will is so powerful that if we do not genuinely want to go back to Krishna in this lifetime, then Krishna will allow Maya to give us so many reasons to get distracted. So many reasons to move to the sidelines. So many reasons to justify something that may be real, but to rationalize in such a way that we conclude that we have justification now not to surrender deeper. I mean, the free will is so scary that we have to look a little closer at how we've abused it for so many lifetimes. I like to pray myself, "Hey Krishna, Prabhupada, take away my free will. Take it back." Because for so many lifetimes, it hasn't done so well. And I don't want to get this close and have another problem. So take away my free will. You know, force me, put me in whatever situation necessary, you know. And then I think if I keep praying it enough, then maybe it'll become a real reality. And then I'll be less and less just operating on the danger of the free will. But it does show that Krishna responds to the aggregate of our desires. And when Prabhupada says many of his disciples want to go to the heavenly planets, he's letting us know that, yes, in spite of so much we know and so much we've experienced and heard, that still so many times people's consciousness and level of devotion is not really surrenagrity or the level of becoming a Suda Bhakta. And Krishna will not force us. Yes. How many? Let me ask a question. How many of you, you know, I'm leaving today, so I want to ask something. How many of you be willing to help me with this prayer? That we pray, "Dear Krishna, anything that I need to experience to help me to become a more serious devotee, let it happen in my life. Anything I need to have taken away that would genuinely help me to be a better servant of yours, let that happen." I would like as many of you as possible to pray to have this prayer in your life. How many of you willing? You raise your hand. Pray like this. We ask Krishna, anything that's necessary that will help us in becoming better servant of Srila Prabhupada's mission, let that happen. Anything needs to be taken away, let it be taken. All right. Okay. You raise your hand in front of Rukmini Dwokadis. So that's between you and the Lord. Yes.
Maybe
I'll make this last question because I know it's a little late.
Okay. When we talk about elevation to the heavenly planets, that kind of isn't that where the quality of truthfulness and isn't even almost that a material quality where it will be enhanced? Like, let's say that here we're like, "Oh, this sabji is not so nice today. I wish that the devotee who cooked it had more devotion." But maybe we're actually thinking we wish that they were better trained to cook nicely. And that's actually something that has to do with like heavenly opulence. Probably up there things are a little bit better organized as well. So how do we take our desire to see the quality of things that we're experiencing here improve, and how is that not a material desire?
Well, let's conclude with this. The gopis are the best servants of Krishna. Best example. Not because they are trying to get something from Krishna, but because they're so much concerned about Krishna's well-being, service, arrangement, that they feel that they're the best to see that Krishna is satisfied. So we have to look at who is in the center. Are we in the center, or are we putting Krishna Prabhupada, we're putting Sadhu Guru in the center? And so as we focus on something, who is really the center? And so when we're the center, then that's a problem. That I want to taste this better, I want this better, I want this comfort, etc. But if Krishna is genuine sinner, then yes, this is our duty. We don't reject things that will allow Krishna to be in the center. See, all about consciousness. And consciousness now, some people have to do their service, some people's stomach is talking out. His confounded child, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada.